From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, strange mysteries and UFO encounters. Here's what's happening. Oh, boy. I've got to say something that I have not wanted to say for some time now. But as we begin this program on a very somber note, our dear friend, paranormal researcher and author Rosemary Ellen Guiley has died at the age of 69. She'd been battling cancer for some time, yet continued to go to conferences, write books, appear on radio and television programs. It was back in 1996 that I first knew of Rosemary while doing my Nighthawk show in St. Louis. I was in a bookstore looking for paranormal guests and authors and stumbled across the Encyclopedia of Dreams, the book by her. Literally stumbled, and as I was falling, I grasped a book, and it was hers. Go figure. Well, she remained a regular guest for me, and then in 2003, when I began hosting this program, I brought Rosemary along as our guest, and we never looked back. She will be missed. Our deepest condolences to her husband, Joe. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, dead at the age of 69. At the coasttocoastam.com website, Lex has posted an incredible story, a magnificent story about the life of Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I invite all of you to please go take a look at that. She will be missed. Britain called for a European-led naval mission to ensure safe shipping through the Strait of Hormuz days after Iran seized a British flag tanker in what London has described as an act of state piracy. And in a separate development that could generate more tension, Iran said it had arrested 17 spies working for the CIA and sentenced some of them to death. In an announcement, President Trump dismissed all of this as totally false. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. John, I'm really concerned about the tension, and what is Iran trying to prove here?
Well, I mean, I think they're always trying to assert themselves, to pound their chests and, show what kind of muscle they have in the Persian Gulf. You know, they have the Iran, the paramilitary or Iranian Revolutionary Guard Force there with speedboats and machine guns and rocket launchers and all of the rest that patrol those waters, and every time they have an opportunity, they can, very easily can abduct or interdict any ship in the region. Now, on July 4th, when the British Marines, with U.S. intelligence, interdicted an Iranian ship bound for Damascus, essentially providing oil to Bashar Assad in Syria, it was against the EU sanctions, so they interdicted the ship around Gibraltar. And since then, the Iranians have gone wild, and they're now, prior to that, they were planting limpet bombs on tankers there. I mean, that was just, the standard sort of rebellion against, the U.S. backing out a year ago, Trump backing out of the Iranian, the joint comprehensive agreement, on the nuclear deal, primarily because Iran was in a proxy war with Saudi Arabia. So, the Europeans have done they practically stood on their heads to try to keep the JCPOA agreement intact, even though the sanctions imposed by the U.S. against Iran and many of its banking entities have literally prevented any Iranian oil sales anywhere. And they've, really taken a beating in their economy and their currency. So this latest move to grab this British tanker, and for the British, who are in absolute chaos right now, not knowing what direction things are taking, it looks like Boris Johnson, the Tory party, former mayor of London and foreign secretary, is probably going to succeed Theresa May, who's going to step down any day. And, the British are talking about some kind of joint venture with the European Union, namely excluding the United States from providing security services in the Persian Gulf for the purpose of pretending that JCPOA is still intact. Of course, it is not intact anymore. Iran has already ramped up its uranium. They probably never stopped. I don't know if you saw the report about Amano Hayaya Amano, who was who just died. This was the late the chairman of the IAEA, the UN's Atomic Energy Agency. And in the deal that was signed by Obama in July of 2015, they excluded all Iranian military secret sites where uranium enrichment is going on. So the whole deal was bogus from the get-go, and Iran is continuing to enrich uranium. Now they're completely open about it and basically blackmailing the West, saying that we're going to go full steam ahead with weapons-grade uranium if the European Union does not continue to buy oil from Iran. So the whole thing is a complete mess, and the British can't go it alone. They do not have the naval resources, and neither does the European Union.
Well, they also, they don't have the firepower either. But I'm going to tell you, if there's one more major Iranian situation, I think all heck is going to break loose there. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Equifax, one of the credit reporting agencies, is going to be paying up to $425 million to help cover the cost incurred by nearly 147 million consumers as a result of the 2017 data breach. The money will reimburse individuals for everything from the time spent filing for credit applications after the breach to monitoring services for the next 10 years. Federal officials have not yet anticipated how all that affected consumers and how they will submit claims for the money. We'll just find out. Just monitor that situation. According to a survey of 2,000 British adults commissioned, 4 out of 10 people regret how they have lived their lives so far. Spending too much time at work and not traveling enough are among some of the respondents' biggest regrets. Other common regrets among those surveyed included neglecting their health and not spending enough time with their family. So make sure you take care of your family and your health. That's what we've been saying for a long time. India is on its way to the moon again, this time to the lunar surface. The nation's robotic mission launched today, rising off the pad atop a launch that came just a week after a delay to a rocket glitch and just days after NASA celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. What else is happening in the skies? Let's check in with Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Hi, Stephen. What do you have for us this week?
Hey, George. Oh, great things as we carry on with our Apollo 11 celebrations in the post mode. There's still amazing stories, George. Maybe people don't know this, but so many artifacts were left by the Apollo astronauts on the moon, and that includes some 12 camera bodies, 12 pairs of boots, how about this, 2 golf balls, and 96 bags of, human waste. But as you were referring to before, George, this amazing mission that's taking place by India, this particular spacecraft, as you reported, known as the Chandrayaan-2. What's unique about it, George, and everybody listening, is that this is a lunar orbiter, a lander, and a 6-wheel rover all packed into one spacecraft. This is amazing. This mission is also unique is that it'll be a first not only for India, but this particular spacecraft, if all goes well, George, will actually soft land, that's the goal, by the south pole of the moon by September the 7th. So this will make these nations that have successfully soft landed to date, India being among those, the United States, Russia, and China. And that's also some of the trivia file. This is quite interesting. It's the first time in India's history that the mission is now led by 2 women. More details on the lander. It's known as by its own name, Vikram. This particular one carries, that is the lander, a 60-pound rover named Pragyan, which will actually traverse the surface of the moon for some 14 days and do real science. George, we continue now and finalize with the live sky. You know, folks, if you've been looking out into the sky, George, in the morning sky, Venus has been the dominant planet that many people see in the morning. But watch what happens as it collides closer in toward the sun, moves to a position we call superior conjunction by around the early days of August, and then magically transitions back to become the so-called evening star, which brightens up our skies. Also things to see, George, the last quarter moon on July the 25th, a great time to look at the lunar surface and imagine if you were there on the surface of the moon, where the Apollo astronauts went. Saturn and Jupiter still rule the evening sky early in the southeast. And finally, George, something cool. As the moon moves toward that waning part near New, this coming weekend, the Delta Aquarid meteor shower, look for it in the southeast sky before dawn, maybe upwards of 10 or 15 slow-moving meteors. Dr. Sky always reminds everyone, always simply remember to keep your eyes to the skies. If you have questions, Yeah, we got answers. Email me at drskyshow@gmail.com.
And, Stephen, NASA's first administrator, Chris Kraft, dead at the age of 95. They just reported it tonight.
How sad, as we continue to memorialize the great achievements of not only Apollo, George, but also all the people who are behind the scenes. And it's a sad bit of news that you just reported. Absolutely.
Thanks, Dr. Sky. We'll look forward to talking to you next week in a moment. Jim Rickards back with us on Coast to Coast. His latest work, Aftermath, 7 Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you about Jim Rickards, the editor of the newsletter Strategic Intelligence and a member of the advisory board of the Center for Financial Economics at Johns Hopkins, an advisor on international economics and financial threats to the Department of Defense and the U.S. intelligence community. He has served as a facilitator of the first ever financial war games conducted by the Pentagon. Jim Rickards, back on Coast to Coast. James, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, George. Great to be with you. Thank you.
Hey, tell me about that financial war game. What was that?
Well, you know, it was the first of its kind. You know, the Pentagon has done financial war games war games of different kinds for decades, but they had never done a financial war game, and I was asked to help facilitate that. We did it at a place called the Applied Physics Laboratory, halfway between Washington and Baltimore. It's all, you know, top secret. They make a lot of spacecraft there, but they also do a lot of weapons. You know, they invented the cruise missile and so forth. But they have something called the Warfare Analysis Laboratory, and it's a giant room, and it looks like, you know, something from a movie or something. But it, you know, it's got big screens around it. It's got a stage. It's got long tables for different teams, and it's where they conduct the war games. So they asked me to help. They needed some Wall Street expertise. And because it had never been done before, we had to sort of make up the rules. You know, would it be 2 days or 3 days, or what would the teams be? Some of the teams were obvious, you know, Russia, China, the United States. But we had a separate team just of banks and hedge funds, because if you had a financial war, the banks and hedge funds would be big players. The main rule was you could not use any what they call kinetic weapons. So kinetic means, you know, it shoots, explodes,
missiles,
bombs. You can't use that. But you could use stocks, bonds, currencies, commodities such as gold, you know, derivatives, and you would use them to disable your enemy, weaken the enemy power, and gain power for yourself. So fight a war with financial weapons only. It was fascinating. Like I say, I call it Risk for Adults. If you remember that board game I played a lot when I was a kid.
Oh yeah, great game, fun game.
Great game. You try to, you know, take over the world. Well, same thing, but using real financial weapons, real countries. We had people from the CIA, the Treasury, the FBI, uniformed military. There's a 3-star general kind of overseeing the whole thing. But a lot of people from, you know, think tanks and universities. But in one of the planning sessions, I said, you know what, if you want to have a real war game, I mean, there are kind of no rules in war. You know, people kind of lie, cheat, steal, do whatever they have to do to win. I said, we need some Wall Streeters in here. We can't just do this with academics. So let me recruit a few of my friends on Wall Street who know all the tricks of the game. We're just going to use those in this different context where I was allowed to do that. And the very, very interesting results. But one of the things that came up, I was playing on the China team. I got to, you know, I organized it, but then I got on the China team. A friend of mine was on the Russia team. So I had dinner with him before the war game, about a couple of weeks before. And I said, look, why don't we cook up a little plot here where Russia and China will agree to put their gold in a vault in Switzerland, you know, neutral country.
This is pretty realistic, Jim.
Well, that's really the point, George. This happened in 2009, and the things that we warned the Pentagon about in 2009 have come true. So they've actually played out the way we told them. I hope they go back to their old notes and see this. But we got laughed at. People said, what are you talking about? Gold is no longer part of the monetary system. You guys are going back to the 19th century. You know, so we said, well, let's just play it out. And we did, and as it played out round after round, it became more and more important. Finally, in the end, they said it was a very innovative suggestion. But to the point, to your point, George, since 2009, China has tripled its gold reserves. They've gone from about 600 tons to almost 2,000 tons.
Wow.
Russia has done the same. They started also around 600 tons. They're up to 2,200 tons. So the question you have to ask yourself is, Why are they tripling the gold reserves? Why are they buying reserves, you know, hand over fist? Are they stupid? Or do they see something coming that we don't or most people don't? Well, I've spent a lot of time in Russia and China. I have friends in both places. They're not stupid. You know, Russia, national sport is chess. China takes a 5,000-year view of everything. They know exactly what they're doing. They see a new world coming, a different international monetary system. They're getting ready for it, and gold is a big part of it. I'm not saying you automatically go back to 1890 gold standard, but gold will play an important role along with other technology in diminishing the role of the U.S. dollar as the major global reserve currency. So this is a big play. It's multi-year. As I said, we warned the Pentagon about it 10 years ago, but now we're actually seeing the results.
To the person at home, Jim, that, they're working, they're trying to make a living, maybe they have two jobs, maybe the wife and the husband are working, maybe they're single parents. I did a show on that last week. What do you see for all of these folks who are out there that might not have a lot invested, so they might not have a lot at risk, but their job is their risk? What do you think the future holds for them?
Well, it's a great question, and you're right about the importance of the job. You know, I do a lot of consulting, give financial advice and so forth, and that's one of the questions that comes up a lot. And the first thing I tell people is do not gamble with your home equity or your business equity. So let's say you could be, a dry cleaner, a pizza parlor operator, and you have a garage, or you're a doctor or a dentist, et cetera. And a lot of people have houses, not everyone. Of course, a lot of people are renting. But if you have home equity or you have business equity, don't gamble with that. Don't leverage that. Don't make that part of your investment portfolio. It's only any money that you have, any savings, over and above that. Those are your investable assets. And that's where you can talk about, how to allocate that. But getting back, let's just say you don't have a lot of savings. I was once speaking in Las Vegas, and it's a kind of a long taxi ride from the airport, and I was talking to the taxi driver, kind of the way we're talking about, what are the risks and what do you do? And I said something about, putting $10,000 into gold, and she was nice, but she kind of snapped at me. She said, "I only have $10,000. That's my life savings. I can't." I said, "Well, just buy one gold coin. Just buy one gold coin. It's about a little over $1,000 at the time. Put it in a safe place. Then no matter what happens, you'll have a little reserve, something that that is immune to the kind of problems that we can see coming. If you're just worried about your job, and that is your first worry. That's how you feed your family and pay the rent and buy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Your main concern, you can have a financial panic, and it wouldn't necessarily affect your job. But if it turned into a depression or even a severe recession, that's when it comes in. So you have to look out for that. You have to say, well, what's out there that could cause that kind of result? Right now, things are, I'll say, okay. You hear a lot of people, the Trump administration, because in the first quarter, we had 3.1% growth from January to March. Well, that's pretty good. That's actually higher than...
That's like a 12% run rate, isn't it?
They do annualize it. So it's 3% annualized.
Oh, annualized. Okay.
I wish we had 12% growth. That would be...
My God, that'd be huge.
Yeah, but 3%. But for 10 years, going back to June 2009, which is when the last recession was over, it's averaged about 2.2%. And all of a sudden, we had a quarter where it was 3.1%. And people say, well, that's only 1% better. What's the big deal? It's a very big deal. You take 1% and compound it over 10 years, that amounts to trillions of dollars. I mean, imagine someone walking into the Oval Office and handing the president a check for $5 trillion and say, "Yeah, Mr. President, here's $5 trillion. Spend it on whatever you want, defense, infrastructure, healthcare, whatever." Well, that's how much wealth we've lost in the last 10 years by growing at a below average rate. Not a recession. I'm not saying, let's say a depression or the end of the world or anything like it, but 2.2% growth is not strong for our economy. But here's the point. In the second quarter, is over. We're going to get those numbers in a couple days. But the best estimate, and they're pretty good, looks like about 1.6%.
Ooh.
So if you take 3.1 and 1.6 and average them out, you get back to 2.2. In other words, I'm not saying the economy is horrible. I'm not. I'm saying it's just kind of the same punk growth. We're chugging along. We have created a lot of jobs.
Well, that's all we're doing, though, is chugging. James, hold on. We're going to hit a break. We'll come back and talk more about your latest work, Aftermath, Seven Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. And welcome back to Coast. We'll take calls next hour with Jim Rickards as we talk about his book, Aftermath, which we'll get into right now. Jim, the seven secrets of wealth preservation in the coming chaos. Want to buzz through those real quickly for us?
Sure. The chaos we'll talk a little bit more about. But when it hits, obviously you have to be ready for it. And I tell people all the time, I've had people say, you know, Jim, I hear what you say. I've read the books. I agree with you. There's going to be a very bad ending to this. But could you call me like 3 o'clock the day before, and I'll sell my stocks and get ready?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
well, a couple things. I'm not going to know.
In a perfect world, that would be great.
Right. I can tell you it's going to happen. I can tell you what's going to happen, but I won't know the day before. And even if I did, I might be a little busy that day myself. But my point is, what are you waiting for? In other words, when the crisis actually hits, you're not going to be able to get the things you want. Say, well, gee, I want to put something into gold. Good luck. I mean, you'll call a gold dealer. If you're not already a customer, they won't return your call. The mint is going to be back ordered. There won't be anything at any price. You'll be sitting there watching it go up, you know, $100 an ounce per day on TV and say, well, I got to get some. You won't be able to get it. So the time to prepare is right now. Now, so you say, well, prepare for what? What's going to happen? One of the problems is I could give you a very long, drawn-out kind of case for deflation. Why deflation? That's where your prices go down. Your cash is actually worth more. Not a world we've seen for a long time, but that's a possibility. But there's also a case for inflation. I think everyone knows what that is, where your cash is worth less. Well, either one of those things could happen because of the uncertainty and because of the dynamics taking place. So how do you design a portfolio that's ready for both things, that will be not only survive but preserve your wealth? Well, I call it the barbell approach. So picture a barbell. You got a lot of weight on one side, you got a lot of weight on the other side, and then you have a bar that connects them. So one of those sides, one of those weights, is the inflation protection. And that's kind of easy, at least in the sense, you know you want some gold, silver, land. So even if you're not, you know, loaded up on gold and silver, just your property if you own a house or if you have a small farm, that land is going to be valuable. Assets, natural resources, water, oil, all those things are going to do very well. They're going to hold their value in an inflationary environment. Now come over to the other side. That's the deflation protection. How do you protect yourself in deflation? Well, a very good instrument are treasury notes. So the United States Treasury is a big debtor. Well, you can be a creditor. You can buy a treasury note. It's the safest investment around, because the United States government is backing it up. And they come in, one year, 2 year, 3 years. But, you know, any backer broker will know how to handle that. You can even do it directly with a treasury. Now, importantly, connecting those two is a slug of cash. I recommend about 30% cash. And people go, wait a second, Jim, you're the guy talking about the depth of the dollar. Why would you have any cash? Well, the answer is there may come a time when you want to pivot out of it. But in the short run, you definitely want some for two reasons. Number one, cash is the opposite of leverage. Everyone knows you get a mortgage, you borrow money, and you lever up. And if it works out, you make more money. But the opposite is true. If you have a lot of leverage, a lot of debt, in other words, in some financial position, and it loses money, you get wiped out faster. You could lose all of your equity very easily.
Yeah, you sure can.
Cash is the opposite. Cash actually reduces the volatility of a portfolio. So,
and when you talk about cash flow, Jim, are you talking about physical cash on hand or in the bank or in a CD? Well, what are you talking about?
I think all of those are fine. I would have some physical cash on hand, not... it's actually hard to get, by the way. Go down to a bank and ask them to give you, $5,000 in cash and $100 bills.
They might not be able to do that.
That's correct. And what they'll say is, we don't have that much on hand. You have to call for an appointment, come back in a couple of days. And you're like, wait a second, it's my money. I always tell people, when you put your money in the bank, and I'm not saying don't ever put money in the bank. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying when you put your money in the bank, it's not your money anymore. It's the bank's money, and they'll give it to you if they feel like it. So if you have large amounts, $100,000 or whatever, you sort of have to have some in the bank. I understand that. But you should have, if you can, $10,000 in cash. I mean, I lived through some nasty storms in the East, Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Irene. I mean, the power goes out. People forget, the power goes out in a hurricane. Yeah, sure, for a couple of days. Well, the ATMs don't work. Credit cards don't work. Debit cards don't
work. Gasoline pumps don't work.
Pumps don't work, et cetera. So having that, what we call in Philadelphia, walking around money, is a good thing. I also recommend, if you have the resources, what's called a monster box. of silver. You say, what the heck's a monster box? It comes directly from the U.S. Treasury, or sorry, from the Mint, which is part of the Treasury. So they come from the U.S. Mint. They have 500 one-ounce silver coins, pure silver, American silver eagles. And so 500 of them at today's prices would be about $9,000. So it's not an inexpensive item. But, you know, people have, they've got a flashlight, batteries, water. You know, if a hurricane's coming, they'll get plywood or whatever to protect their houses. Having a monster box is extremely valuable. If things get really bad, and there are other scenarios, I mean, social unrest and so forth, you can feed your family with it. And everyone says, what about gold? Well, I recommend gold in a portfolio. But, you know, an ounce of gold, one ounce coin is about $1,400. That's going to feed your family for a year. You won't be able to spend
it. Well, let me ask you a question, though, Jim. Let's say you go out and buy 1 ounce, a silver dollar. It weighs what, an ounce?
Correct.
Okay. And what would you pay for that 1 ounce right now?
As a dealer, about $20.
$20. But if you go to buy something with it, you're only buying a dollar's worth of stuff, right?
Well, no, because you're now kind of in a barter system again. When we're talking about the infrastructure,
I mean, it would be foolish to use as currency.
Correct. Well, you would never use it as a dollar. And you're right; it says $1 on it, but like a 1 ounce gold coin, it says $50. Well, sorry, it's worth $1,400 at today's market. So you would never spend it as $50,
which you could not get at a store, though.
Well, that's right, but you know,
if I go to 7-Eleven and give them this silver dollar, I'm not going to get $20 for it.
Well, you might get $20 worth of grocery, depending on where you are. I mean, it could be a farmer's market, it could be doesn't have to be a 7-Eleven. I agree, they're kind of corporate, but a local store, a farmer's market, where there's no other kind of money. And again, if you could spend your money easily, keep the silver. Don't spend it. Keep the silver. But if you can't spend your money easily, if confidence is breaking down, if trust is breaking down, you pull out that silver coin, they'll say thank you very much, and they'll take it in exchange for, you know, whatever goods and services you're buying.
Well, what if you had a $10 bill?
Well,
would that work too?
Well, it might. Yeah, and that's the reason to have cash, because we talked about that a little bit earlier. But, you know, I should share with the audience, I'm actually in the Mount Washington Hotel in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire right now. And people say, what the heck is that? Why is that special? Well, Bretton Woods, you talked earlier about the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. Today is the 75th anniversary of the Bretton Woods International Monetary Conference that established the monetary system that lasted from 1944 until today. A lot of those institutions still work. And I'm here with a group, and again, people talk about, you know, the cabal and the monetary elite.
Oh, they sure do.
They're real. They're out there. I mean, I can name them, but they're all here. I had dinner tonight with Larry Summers, former Secretary of the Treasury. Stephanie Kelton's here. She's the top advisor to Bernie Sanders' campaign. So if Bernie wins, you'll see her in the Treasury. People from the Council on Foreign Relations. So we're all here to commemorate the 75th anniversary of Bretton Woods. We're in the same hotel where it took place. This place is over 100 years old. So 75 years ago, John Maynard Keynes was walking the halls, coming up with this new monetary system. But we're talking about the future of the international monetary system. And obviously that includes, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, different kinds of crypto coins. I personally am not a big fan, but I understand the technology, and I think the blockchain, there's something there. But I talk about money all the time, and it's amazing. You would think the Federal Reserve, you know, our central bank, would know what money is. But you go and look at their balance sheet, they've got M1, M for money, you know, so they've got M0, M1, M2. I'm like, wait a second, you guys have four definitions of money. You don't even know what money is. But what I explain to people is the key to money is trust and confidence. If I give you something I call money, and you trust not only me, but you trust the money. You think that you'll be able to give it to somebody else for other goods and services. Then it's money. Now, over time, in different places, people have used feathers, beads, jewels, now certainly gold and silver. But we have cryptocurrencies, digital money, credit cards, debit cards, et cetera. It's all money. And people say, well, it's not backed up by anything. You know, the dollar's not backed up by anything, or Bitcoin's not backed up by anything. But I explain to people, they're all backed up by one thing, and it's the same thing, which is confidence. If you have confidence,
exactly.
You can take it from me, and someone else and has confidence they can take it from you. It's money. But here's the point. Confidence is fragile. It's very easily lost. And when it's lost, it's almost impossible to regain. So right now, in a hurricane, could I pull a $10 bill out of my wallet and buy, you know, some groceries? Sure. But what if something caused a loss of confidence in that $10, where somebody said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pass that along. I don't know if anyone wants it. That's the question you have to ask yourself. What state of the world?
And, exactly.
And we're a little closer than a lot of people realize.
So what you're saying, though, is there would be a quicker loss of confidence in that bill, that paper piece of bill, whether it's $10 or $100, than a piece of gold or silver.
Correct. And I would never spend the silver if you would take the $10 bill. But I'm envisioning a world where somebody might not take the $10 bill.
Right.
And in that world, that silver coin will get you very far. It'll get your groceries. It'll take care of your family.
Now, you say, Jim, that the 2008 financial crisis, which was a disaster, never really ended.
That's exactly right, because we didn't fix any of the problems. Now, I know the recession was over in June 2009, and we've been growing. And as I said before, the economy's not great, but it's not awful. It's just kind of in between, you know, kind of muddling along. But you have to go all the way back to 1998. What happened in 1998? That was the Russia default and that hedge fund long-term capital management. By the way, I negotiated that bailout, so I had kind of a front row seat for that one. All that happened, and Wall Street got together, scraped up $4 billion in cash, and bailed out that hedge fund, long-term capital management. They didn't really bail out the hedge fund. They bailed out themselves because the hedge fund owed them $1 trillion. So they were kind of protecting themselves. So Wall Street bailed out a hedge fund. Come forward 10 years, what happened? Now Wall Street's in trouble. Bear Stearns, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Lehman Brothers, AIG, they were falling one after the other. Morgan Stanley would have been next, then Goldman Sachs after that. And the central banks bailed out Wall Street. But all they kept doing, they kept moving the debt up to a higher and higher level. So it goes from a hedge fund to Wall Street. Then it goes from Wall Street to the central banks, the Federal Reserve and the European Central Bank and so forth. But here's the problem, George. They have never got back to normal. So Ben Bernanke, who was chairman of the Fed, they had $800 billion on their balance sheet. He took it to $4.5 trillion.
Just like that?
Just like that. It took a few years, but they printed up to $4.5 trillion.
Nothing backing it, though.
No, that's right, except the confidence we just talked about.
That's right.
But here's the thing. They never got back to normal. It'd be one thing if they had taken it up and then brought it back down to the $800 billion level. I'd be the first one to say, hey, nice job. You know, you saved the world with this quantitative easing, and you took it back to normal. But they never did. Interest rates are not back to normal. The Fed's balance sheet is not back to normal. So here's the question. What happens if a recession hits tomorrow? I'm not saying it will, but it could.
Yeah, can they do this again?
Well, they can't because, I mean, sorry, legally they can, but there's a confidence boundary. So you took it to $4 trillion. What are you going to do? $5 trillion, $6 trillion, $7 trillion? At what point do people wake up and say, you know what? I'm not a PhD economist. But I don't like this. I think it's out of control. I've lost confidence in it. Get me out of the dollar. Now, you could buy gold or silver. We talked about that. You could buy land. You could buy art. You could buy any tangible asset. You could buy a new car, but anything. But get me out of the dollar. That's where inflation can appear almost overnight. And we had this. You know, a lot of people say, well, okay, the Federal Reserve, our central bank, it was created in 1913, and they'll bang the table and say, the dollar has lost 95% of its purchasing power since 1913. Well, that's true, but the economists would say, yeah, but, you know, your stocks are worth more and your salary's higher and it's, you know, it's all good. But there was a period, 5 years, from 1977 to 1981, when the dollar lost over 50% of its purchasing power in 5 years. You don't have to go back to 1913. It lost 50% in 5 years. President Carter issued bonds, Treasury bonds, United States Treasury bonds, denominated in Swiss francs. Nobody wanted the dollar. Like, why is the Treasury issuing bonds in Swiss francs? They were called Carter bonds. Well, it was because there was a loss of confidence in the dollar. So, okay, we got through that. Paul Volcker raised interest rates to 20%, caused the worst recession since the Great Depression at the time. And we got through it. But that was we were borderline hyperinflation. There was a loss of confidence in the dollar. That's when gold went from $35, which it was in 1971, to $800. I realize it's a lot higher today, but at the time, that was people just shaking their heads. I used to work in Midtown Manhattan. My office was at 53rd Street. I used to walk up to 59th Street to go shopping or whatever. You couldn't go outside without seeing a chain snatching. Yeah, because a woman would have a gold chain, and somebody would grab it and run around the corner, and she'd scream, and yeah, somebody would try to chase them. But that happened every day. So that's how my point is, not to scare people, because I don't want to scare people. What I want to do is talk to them about what could happen and make sure people are prepared. But that's how quickly things can get out of control. They got out of control in the late 70s. There are a lot of dangers out there right now. So a little bit of precaution goes a long way.
Well, we've got a lot to worry about, though, don't we?
Well, the biggest thing is things very few people see coming, which is financial warfare. Now, one of your earlier guests was talking about what's going on with Iran, and that is a serious situation. So a couple of weeks ago, Iran shot down one of our drones.
Yep.
And everyone, the whole world was waiting for President Trump to fire cruise missiles into Iran or something along those lines. He didn't do it. And people said, well, you know, that's kind of a relief. You know, a drone is replaceable. We don't have a war with Iran. Well, actually, we do have a war with Iran. We're in a war with Iran now.
Let's talk about that, Jim, when we come back. Also, Aftermath, your book is available at Amazon and bookstores, and Jim's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we're taking your calls next with him, too, on Coast to Coast AM.